The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! Right on the siren! Solomon Pickett, whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down your marks!
Oh, gee whiz.
He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Higginbotham takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh?
Pickett lines up.
Going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy.
Started with him.
Yep. Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. That is the play of the game.
We underestimate the footy brain in Dustin Martin. You look at his physical ability. That champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals you can make the case for being best on ground.
I think they were a better team last year than they are now.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we just finished top four again.
It's almost getting repetitive, isn't it?
Oh, just plug it straight into my veins.
Yeah, absolutely. It was funny. The game start, the Adelaide game started with the commentators. I think it was Roo talking about Dusty and Dusty always plays well on the big stage. And sorry, mate, this isn't the big stage for Dusty. This is a minor performance he has to endure before the real stuff starts. And, you know, I was just thinking that's just the advantage of being a big relevant club is that games like this are just a small, an entree to the main event, an undercard.
They're a tune-up. You're just trying to get in form, kick
full
a few
contact
cobwebs.
Sparring.
Yeah, kick a few cobwebs out, particularly if those cobwebs are located on the other side of the boundary line. In Dusty's case,
yeah he was.
Avoid injuries.
A bit of the danger fields going on.
Yep, avoid injury, which we seem to have navigated successfully. I mean,
except for
Arts
Caddy.
And Caddy were a bit dinged up, but there doesn't seem to be a question about their availability for Brisbane. And to be clear, this episode we're gonna talk about the Adelaide game. We're gonna talk about how we're feeling about the season as a whole, catch up on some news, and next week we're gonna dive deep into Brisbane team selection. All those issues, but I think it's fair enough to take a moment to smell what the Tigers have been cooking.
Yeah, absolutely, and just another game where I think you said to me at halftime, this game's going to be a grind, and we just beat a team which had won 3 in a row, was old, average age 25, 25 and a half. So that's a team that, you know,
it's mature.
Yeah, yep. Record has got a lot of. I think it had as many players with plus 150 games as we did. I believe it was 8. And we sort of handled them easily. We had a tiny. The goal kicking went slightly our way, but you know we dominated time and forward 50 and all the important metrics. So all the important metrics for Richmond football. It was just another classical performance than to be enjoyed.
Mm. And it wasn't absolute our best football, but we're playing pretty good football. It didn't, as as much of a nervous wreck as I am through almost all Richmond games, we did feel in control. Although, you know, when we put our now, standard, it's kind of a thing, that third quarter burst and the other team can't go with it. We've consistently had that extra gear in the second half of this year, and it's been really fun.
It has. Like, it's great footy. Nick, you realise we're number one in the AFL in metres gained and 12th in the AFL in disposals.
Hmm.
So just think about that. That's such efficiency.
Yeah.
And there was a fantastic, you know, that first quarter goal. I believe it was Arts who finished it, but the highlight that everyone saw was the Shedder hand pass.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you could see it, like, it was barely visible to the human eye.
Exactly. And it's one of those classic Shedder moments which you might not have picked up if you were watching just on, if you were watching it live in the stands. It's really a TV hand pass. But Adelaide had that covered. Adelaide knew the forward hand pass was coming, and a combination of Shedder brilliance and George having the speed and athleticism to get in between two Crows players and knock it free, bit of George chaos, meant that we split the zone. It was just like, it's classic Richmond. The other team knew what was coming and they couldn't stop it. Beautiful to watch.
Mm. Which is why I get a laugh about stories like, you know, Sean Grigg will share some of the Richmond DNA with Geelong. By this time of year, there's only sort of a few minor tweaks to the game plan that are a possible surprise. I think, you know, we have the Richmond style. Teams know it's coming, and it's a question of can they stop it? And the answer at the moment is coming up no.
Yeah, so we are overwhelming flag favourites. And Nick, what do we say?
I would question. What, $3.50?
Yeah, and that's
it's better than anybody else, but everyone else put together is the overwhelming flag.
Oh, that's exactly where I was going to go, Nick. We've only made that exact point on this podcast about 50 times.
But I feel like we are the only people in the universe saying that.
Yeah, that just because you're the favourite doesn't mean you're likely to win it. We are not likely to win it. The probability is we won't win it, but we are just the least unlikely team to win it.
And we've been spoiled horribly by the 2017 and 2019 finals series where it felt like we were invincible. And, you know, who knows what would have happened in 2018 if it hadn't been cancelled.
Yeah, exactly. What a shame. Mason Cox. He commented. Not just a single game meme anymore, and he praised Dimmer on Twitter over the weekend. And I just thought, things that make you go
We do need a bit of extra rock tips.
We'll come to that, Nick. I have takes. Who did you want to talk about?
So there is a theory which I'm quite interested in. When you look at players like Cade Simpson and Shane Burgoyne, Kevin Bartlett, Boomer Harvey, these are not your sort of Tony Luckett-sized human beings. They are pretty lean, wiry, not carrying a lot of weight type of players who have long, relatively injury-free careers. And I can't help but hope that Shane Edwards, not the biggest guy in the world, and the moment he touched the ball for the first time, I just had this overwhelming feeling that I am not ready for Shane Edwards' career to be anywhere near over soon.
Yeah, like he comes back. Aside from his brilliance around the packs, he came back so many weeks off. He wins 8 clearances. For the first time in forever, we win the centre square clearances despite having fairly ordinary rucking.
Against a team that's pretty solid in the clearances.
Yes, he is by far and away the best clearance player on Richmond, which the stats say, but you really notice it when he's away. And yeah, I really hope you're right that he can continue to play. I mean, he looks shredded.
Three votes?
As I said on Twitter, finds the AFL rankings loved him, thought he was BOG. Find someone who loves you as much as the AFL rankings. I love Shane Edwards. By the way, for people, the AFL rankings really rewards people who have meters gained in their disposals and dangerous parts of the ground that goes to a teammate. Mm. What does Sheds do a lot of? Attacking hand passes and kicks through the center of the ground into the forward line. Like that it's just the perfect game plan to be well rated. And by the way, that style of play is highly rated because over the long term, that is the best way to score. So it is not underrated, not overrated. It's appropriately rated. And Shane Edwards is just so incredibly valuable in so many different ways. But yes, BOG, look, probably yes, because I can't on the champion data. Dusty was, I guess, they were the two best players on the champion data rankings.
Ooh, I only saw the AFL player ratings. Riley O'Brien would have rated fairly high.
Yes. He was actually best on ground by that measure. Best on ground for us, so second best on ground overall, was Dusty. But look, maybe we're victims of his good disposal, but, you know, as you pointed out, yeah, quite a few balls out of bounds on the fall.
The radar was a bit off, but if you had to pick one aspect of his game to be off, I actually don't mind it's the kicking all that much, because if he's winning the ball, marking everything that comes near him, dominating opponents, like I just feel like it'll come.
He did have 14. Sorry, go.
Oh, he's too highly skilled a player to, you know, he had a bad night, but he's just winning a ton of football.
He had a match leading 16 contested possessions too. So yeah, it's not like there aren't good cases for why he played well, but yeah, just not a vintage performance.
No. The goal was pretty sweet.
The goal was, I had the commentary turned off, but I actually said exactly the same thing as the commentators, that that the umpires made the right decision for the drama of the game. That, you know, if it was another player, maybe you don't pay that, but you've got to let Dusty have that banana shot.
The boundary umpire was right there, and it was impossible to tell from the TV. So
yeah, it is. But like, it's great for the game. Like, it was my second favorite moment of the game, and I'll get to my favorite moment in a moment.
Okay. Look, we've talked about how he's going well, but Jack Graham really is going well. His pressure acts are at their usual absurd heights. But so he's played 12 games on the year. He played 6 games up to round 8, averaging 12 disposals a game. He's come back into the team from round 12, averaging 18 disposals a game. His contested ball winnings gone up, his meters gains gone up, and he's working just as hard defensively. It is, he's in a team where some really hard selection calls are going to have to be made next week. I think he's best 22.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. The question is, to me, is what he gets paid like next year. Does he get paid as a B-plus tier mid? Because that's what he is right now. Like, he's playing really well. And he's, you know, you mentioned his pressure rating, but he had pressure points, and I know there are sort of a lot of people don't, but he had 74 on the weekend. The next highest player had 50, which was a very credible performance from Pickett. And the highest Crow was Sloan with 46. So he's the highest pressure player on the team. But now he's actually getting the 42, plenty of attacking ball, 20 touches. He's playing brilliantly, and a lot of people would lose his spot, including Kane Lambert, before him. right now.
Kane Lambert was good though. I liked his game.
Yeah, he's still. I think I'm attracted to the theory. Maybe it's too reductionist that it seems like he plays better once the class goes up in the midfield around him.
So he plays that sort of half forward midfield role. I just think everything just works better when you introduce Shane Edwards into that mix. You know, at half forward, taking turns in midfield, and then Bolton's got to come back in as well. It's abundance of riches. You mentioned about credible efforts. Jake Arts, Exhibit A.
So, Nick, as you know, amongst some of our Tiger friends, there's much joking at about the flack that we threw at Jake Arts, particularly me. But, you know, I didn't hear too strong an argument from you either.
No.
And, you know, I've been thinking about it because I really like the way he plays. And the annoying thing is, he's normally the kind of player I like.
I know. Yeah.
I sort of like, you know, guess how many times he made like I just sort of like, in all those VFL games, why did he not stand out? And I guess the thing is, statistically, he was doing basically the same thing in VFL that he's doing now, which it often doesn't stand out. Like, you know, often the good players, like, you know, go watch Sean Ross in a VFL game, Jack Ross, sorry, and he turns quicker than everyone else. He does things that just the other VFL listed players. But Arts doesn't necessarily, he's just mastered this small forward competence, hard running. But, you know, he only made the best four times last year. Like, that's not a lot. He played 16 games, I believe. Actually, that might have been his 218 stats. But, like, he was not dominating the best.
No, he got better over time. Like, but it was a really, it's a slow incremental process. Like, whereas Kane Lambert was a very good VFL player for a long time, and everyone kept asking why he wasn't in the AFL.
Quite exactly the comparison. He was not Kane Lambert. Yeah. He was not Killian. No, but in fairness,
he was Nathan Broad. Nathan Broad only became a regular senior waffle player when he was 23 years old. And we picked him at the end of the year. He'd never been invited to an AFL draft camp or even state screening before that year.
To be fair to him, I reread his AFL prospectus rating, and he was starting to like be good at the sort of the key small forward metrics last year in the VFL. And I think we talked about it because I can see my notes from the time written in the margins of the AFL prospectus. Okay, so he's playing really well. He's definitely got his spot in the team, which I don't think was in doubt anyway. But also, he did only have 12 touches and he sort of disappeared in the second half. He only had three. So, you know, great performance, but let's also not get carried away.
You know what I also enjoyed was that when the Crows tried to generate some momentum from their own forward handball game, like they would hand pass forwards to somebody, and that player would almost instantly have a Richmond player rushing up on them from behind and impacting the contest and just not giving them a single moment to breathe. Like we just didn't let them establish any fluency in their game.
No, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, I mentioned Pickett before, but, you know, he had seven tackles and he's almost become a specialist pressure player, like he's sort of Jack Graham's apprentice.
Well, except for the other specialist pressure player on the other wing as well. Like, I think both him and K-Bank, they are monstering dudes.
They are. K-Mac's pressure acts weren't as good. It wasn't actually, aside from the People's game, People's goal, which was just gorgeous. Caps didn't have a brilliant game. Do you know who had by far the best game of our small forwards? not by far, but the best.
Dan Rioli?
Yeah. Fine touches, but killed it in the pressure racks. You know, just plenty of round the ground stats. Like his possession rate is right up in in the last few weeks. He's not kicking spectacular goals, which we sort of remember him for. He's doing a lot of very useful small things on the team.
Yeah, he's doing his job, and he's a proven big game player as well. Yeah, I think I'm excited to see what he can provide. At the other end of the excitement spectrum, I thought Dave Asprey was very solid.
I have Dave Asprey takes, Nick.
Ooh. Led the team in intercept disposals.
Yep. And there is sort of, I was worried before the game, didn't discuss on the pod, discuss it with you, about the structural effect of what happens when Asprey comes in and takes Noah's role. I have this slightly perhaps oversimplistic theory that that role, that sort of key centerpiece, key back role is the easiest role to play for a guy learning the game, not like just mentally. I'm not saying it's not physically hard. And that Noah had settled there nicely, and I was worried about him playing a different role. And Noah's, by the way, I really liked how Dave is really down the line. Dave is just like double down and going down the line. He literally did nothing but go down the line every single ball, which is fine. Look, he plays with him. Like, he had a 90% effective disposal rate. He just doesn't make a mistake. He's just never going to set up, and he's never going to be the sole reason you kick a goal through his brilliant kick. Which is fine, because that's not what he's in the team to do. And yes, actually, sort of the theory was partly true. Like, Noah had one of his lowest intercept games for the year, and he seemed slightly discombobulated. Or through that one goal where it looked like our defence broke down. The Lynch shot. That was actually on Flossie, not on Bolter, even though it looked like it was on Bolter. Flossie went to pick up his man when they'd actually switched.
And we had the occasional moment where Jaden Short ended up on Darcy Fogarty, which was an idea.
Suboptimal.
But I noticed a few moments where they were blocking for each other, which I really enjoyed. And I do think it makes us less vulnerable to other teams for when teams go big. And we won't talk much about Brisbane, but their normal starting forward line, they like to play 3 195 centimetre plus guys in the forward line, and if that's the case, I don't think we're too big.
Yeah, and that's fair with Brisbane, and obviously it's an immediate thing. But there's sort of the question comes with teams like Geelong, you probably can't play true key backs.
You need to work it out, yeah.
So the question is, Nick, I was just sort of tossing in my head, is like, is it almost worth, like, clearly Asprey and Noah are both in our best 22, are in our 22 most talented players, but are they both in our best 22 against a team with a short forward line? And look, this is just an intellectual exercise. I'm not saying we should do it, but if you only had to pick one player, if you look at both their stats for the year, now Asprey's only kicked, played 5 goals, but if you compare them side to side this year's stats, who do you think comes out in front?
Probably Bolter offensively. David, like, if you're mentioning about the AFL prospectus, so defensively, Asprey was comfortably in the top 10 of key defenders last year. So I think...
So the first bits, I think the first, sorry, the second bit you said is, I believe, still true. And I would have guessed what you said as well, or through, I was interested enough to check. On every major offensive output, Asprey's in front. And also in
intercepts. He's not as much fun, though.
He's definitely not as much fun, and he hasn't kicked a goal from 70. But, like, if you look at intercepts, like, and that's a measure of how, like, that's sort of a product of you winning a lot of those one-on-one contests. Asprey's in front. And then you go to the how many. He gets more possessions, which surprised me. Yeah. So there you go. So I hate to say it, but if you're going to drop one or move one out of centre half back, it is like right now, and like partly this has helped, as I said, only five games for Asprey. But yeah, Noah Bolter's good games are better, or at least as good. But like Asprey's had nine intercepts. He's had multiple games this year where he's had nine intercepts. So it's actually his most common is the mode, right? The most common number. Is nine for intercepts for him. Thank you for indulging that little sideline.
No,
I just wanted to have something else to talk about other than the rucks.
Yeah. Well, we did say that we'll talk selection next week, but I will put to you one of the great principles of the 2017 premiership win wasn't necessarily going to a small forward line. It was picking the best 22 players. I think there's some hard discussions to be had on that front last week because, we've had reservations before about that the scratch matches that they're doing for the VFL players are glorified circle work, and Mabia Chol looked like he'd been doing glorified circle work for a month.
Oh, yeah. So I have Mabia Chol takes as well, Nick, and I promise this is my last lengthy rant. So the conventional wisdom is true. His contesting work was awful.
Particularly in the first quarter, I thought.
Yes. And he had three possessions all day. He was targeted a lot. They showed a graphic in the third quarter, which I'm sure you noticed, that, we basically, what we did was we tried to play Marbs in a Lynch Light role. Now, I will say Marbs was bad, but Richmond supporters perceive him to be worse than he was because we have probably the best key forward in the AFL who never gets beaten for not getting beaten in a contest and controlling the drop of the ball. Lynch is not statistically the best defensive key forward, but so much of our game plan is set up around the fact that Lynch is a rock when you kick the ball to him. He just doesn't get beaten. The ball falls to very predictable spots. So we have these incredibly high standards, and we didn't change our game plan. We bombed the ball a lot to Marbs, and Marbs didn't perform, but he probably a few times he actually got his hand to the ball. Because he doesn't have the strength, it didn't go to the right spot. And guess what? What Adelaide was doing to Marbs, we do to other teams all the time. These intercept marks, they happen a lot in AFL. They just don't happen as much to us because we've got Tommy Lynch. It was bad, but it wasn't bad. The thing that just annoyed the crap out of me, Nick, is that in the third quarter, I think he'd had one touch by that stage. And I think it was Jack kicks that beautiful kick to the middle of him, at the middle of the field, which he wound up kicking a goal for. But he went for the mark one-handed. Like, what was he thinking? I don't know. The two hands for beginners if you've had one touch at halftime.
He was okay in the last quarter rucking against O'Brien, who's a big bad man. I thought he was okay. He wasn't great, but he was okay.
Look, I wonder, we've talked so much about the rucks on this podcast, and probably if we're to be honest, what we've done is basically neutralized them for our two premierships. The downside, our rucks could be bad enough to if we need 2007 Nank back, if there were signs of life, but if Nank regresses or gets injured, that might cost us the flag.
He worked in typical Nank fashion. His opponent ended up with really good stats, but he worked his way into the game, and he did grind away, and yeah, it was influential in the third quarter.
Yeah, and as previously discussed, we for once we didn't get flogged in the centre square clearances, which is probably more to do with Shedder, but Nank wasn't unimportant. Nick, you know that moment where I've forgotten who it was, Chipshotter, Cochin, and
One of the Crouchers.
Yeah, sorry, yes, it was one of the Crouchers, and Nank pushed his head into the dirt. And it led to an Adelaide point. I think that was a point well spent.
Yeah, I was totally fine with it. sending a message about what is acceptable. It is worth knowing.
You want your big bloke to be physical.
Yeah, of the other top four teams. Now, obviously, that's very carefully chosen to exclude the team that finished fifth. But of the top four teams, only Port Adelaide has a good first ruckman, and the rest of the and Geelong and Brisbane are competent. So yeah, it may not be as big a weakness as we fear.
Yeah, and look, I'm quite happy that West Coast are playing Collingwood in a loser leaves town match, because both their rucks have the ability to score goals out of the ruck. Get it out of the ruck contest and things like that, which just kills you. So, yeah, agree.
Mm.
Nick, there was one final player I just want to pay a little bit of credit to.
Yep.
I think Josh Caddy's injury was actually quite bad.
Oh, snap. That was...
Well, you go.
That was who I wanted to talk... I so enjoyed... I really enjoyed both his goals. The flashback to... when he couldn't miss a single shot on goal, and then him monstering someone in a one-on-one forward contest, which, because we have Lynch, Jack, and Dusty, he just doesn't get to do that anymore. That was pretty fun.
No, and look, I think he was cooked at halftime. You saw him, what he was doing with his foot, and Dimmer said that he thought he was gone for the game, and then he came back out there. It was Caddy's choice. I think Caddy made a choice that I might be gone for the year, so I'm just going to reduce the rotations for this game. And he had one pressure act for the game, Nick. Like, that's a guy who couldn't run. He couldn't he couldn't follow the football. So he did what he could, best he could in that circumstance, is sort of hung around the forward line, and basically he got the old "you're injured, go into the goal square," and maybe you can sort of take a contested mark, which he did, and it was a really nice mark, and I think it was very brave, and I think he sacrificed his body for the good of the team, and I suspect we won't see him again till at best the preliminary final, if at all.
I don't know. It's got a week. They've got a week off. I think that's not a. That's not a small thing.
I hope you're right, but yeah, I'm pessimistic.
Yep. The last player I wanted to mention, George Castagna. Again, he probably becomes more important when we play with a smaller forward line, and he has to throw himself at the ball in the air. In the air again, and he hasn't had his best year, but he hasn't had a bad. His form has improved, and yeah.
Kicked another goal, which is good too.
Yeah, kicked another goal. I think he's fine, ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the forwards are locked in. I think I've said joke previously. I don't think Castagna's getting blocked. Drop for love or money, and the other two are in really good form. Rioli is slightly less flashy, but no less valuable. So, yeah, I think they were killing it. Pickett is holding his spot because of his defensive work, incredibly important in the modern Richmond structure. It's an incredibly hard team to get into. I think by all indications, Presti will – look, I don't want to kill the preview, but looks like Presti probably –
he's going to play in a scratch match. This weekend, so yeah, I mean, fingers crossed. It does feel as if the Richmond medical staff have the Midas touch at the moment.
Yeah, they do. It does. Yeah, I'm weirdly like, objectively, you shouldn't be confident at all that Brestia will come back. Barely played all year. Really bad injury. It was on the Alter G like last year, like 1 or 2 weeks ago. I heard. The club said, and you know, it's a midfield. It's the hardest running position. But yeah, I think Jack Ross was okay again. But if he gets up to AFL running standard, I think he'll come in.
Yep, definitely. Anyone else from the game?
No, there's one off-field person I wanted to just compliment.
Oh, okay. I had a couple of bits of off-field news. So they announced the AFL 22 under 22 team with Liam Baker and Noah Bolter, and it's a sign of how smug we are that the complaint from it was that Bolton didn't make it, which I think is a reasonable complaint.
Oh, it's not reasonable. It is ridiculous. Like, I mean, it was a fan voted poll, so meaningless, but it's just, it's voting for sort of fantasy football reputation players. Like, Bolton is, by the advanced metrics, a far better player playing in both cases on a better team. Like, it was silly. Like, Bolter's been the key attacking midfielder on a top four team. That's incredibly rare at his age.
Top 10 in the AFL in inside 50. So.
Yeah, like it was a silly selection, but, you know, it's fan polls are just that. They're just fan polls.
Speaking of fan polls, I do enjoy that the Australian Selection Committee has both Kevin Bartlett and Matthew Richardson on it. I do, yeah. they're people who bleed black and yellow.
I didn't have a problem with any of the ones, though.
No, I thought it was pretty reasonable. So Vlossie, Grimes and Dusty. I don't know. In midfield, it's extraordinarily difficult.
But here's the beautiful thing, Nick. Dusty is technically a mid forward. So that's why.
What half forward can match up to him statistically?
Exactly. So statistically, he's probably not in the top three mids in the AFL because, like, that's the best players in the game. And you know, Dusty. He's had down games this year, but on the half forward line, he's supreme. So he'll be fine. He'll make it. Dylan, obviously, it's sort of a reputation respect thing, and you know, playing fantastically. And you know what? I reckon there's a pretty good case Vossie should make it too.
I know. He's just
on the advanced. Yeah, on the, like, we can see with our eyes how effective he is. On sort of the advanced metrics, he's the fourth best general forward in the AFL, and you think two keys.
No, defender, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, did I say forward? Sorry, my bad. Yeah. Two keys, four defenders, so he should probably be your last on-field back pocket. And also, you know, you've got a top four running premier team. You probably want about three players from your top four team in it. So, I reckon. Look, it wouldn't be an outrage if Vossie didn't get selected, but I reckon on balance he probably should. You know, last year let's face it, Basher Hawley might have got selected because he's a top bloke playing on a good team. And has had
a really good year too.
He did have a good year, but I think of the two cases, Vossie is stronger just for this year. Again, you know, we'll see if he makes it. It wouldn't be a travesty, didn't. But it's probably an underratedly good case, I think, for Vossie.
Yeah, and shout out to the Brett Delidio who managed to pick his All Australian 22 without a single Richmond player.
Yeah,
oh Lids.
Yeah,
we loved you so much for so long.
Well, you know, the wounds are fresh.
Yeah, but look, it's September. Finished top four, you know. Yeah, it's all there. I'm really excited.
Yeah, me too. And Nick, there was just one thing before you wrap up. I don't know where Peggy is, if she's going to go up to the hub. She certainly hasn't been talked about like a lot of the other presidents, but sort of her low-key, mature leadership sort of governance by, versus some of these other presidents who are swanning around Queensland in a high-profile manner. By the way, mate, you don't get a kick. The team doesn't need you every day. And also your whole sort of – not your whole membership base, but 70% of your membership base is trapped in Melbourne, and you're over there swanning it up. Like, you know, think of what a football club is, which is it's a club of the members. It's not the president and the blokes who play footy. So I'm just, for the millionth time, I'm appreciative of Peggy's low-key, no-fuss membership presidency.
Yeah. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. The only best time. 4, 3, 2, 1. It's a goal. What a fire.
Shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Higginbottom takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal.
How sweet it is, eh? Pickett lines up.
Going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy.
Started with him.
Yeah. Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. That is a play of the game.
We underestimate the footy brain in Dustin Martin. You look at his physical ability. Champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals you can make the case for being best on ground.
I think they were a better team last year than they are now.